You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
On this episode of the Ivy Podcast, I host Diane Strofus, who is the Chief Human Resources Officer at BetterWorks, a leading enterprise HR solution for continuous performance management in Silicon Valley. We covered a range of topics from the role of CHROs on executive boards to leveraging of AI and RPA in human resources. We hope you enjoyed this episode and let us know your thoughts.
Diane, welcome to the Ivy Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So as a Chief Human Resource Officer at BetterWorks, I'm curious, what areas of responsibility fall under your role and how long have you been with the company?
So, great question. I've been with BetterWorks almost 2 years now. It'll be 2 years in a few months, and it's been a fun ride. Let me start a little bit by talking a little bit about BetterWorks. We are a SaaS-based company here in Silicon Valley, and we sell an application that helps companies with continuous performance management. I am the CHRO of the company, and we are a six-year-old startup. So my role is kind of an interesting one in that I cover both leading HR as well as I get to work with customers and work with our product group and speak at conferences and folks like yourself influencing in the direction of continuous performance management. So it's kind of a fun job.
It sounds very exciting. In a six-year-old startup, I find myself in a very similar situation working for a 10-year-old startup. So
perfect.
I can relate to excitement and the challenges you're probably dealing with.
Exactly.
What business problem is BetterWorks solving through its products and services?
So, you know, it's interesting because over the last decade or so, businesses have dramatically shifted and changed. And so companies are finding that they need new and different ways to not only engage their population, but engage their population to drive business results. And our company does just that. So, for example, we actually sell an application and services that help companies navigate through goal setting and driving frequent lightweight conversations throughout their employee population to help them drive business results and engage their population. So we kind of find ourselves at this interesting pivot point where, you know, it's one of few HR processes, you know, continuous performance management is one of few HR processes that actually can drive engagement and business results all at the same time. So we help companies do that. And it's an interesting problem that companies are having because the pace of business has changed so dramatically and our workforce has changed so dramatically over the last decade that companies are really struggling with, you know, shifting to new business models and new innovative ways to drive business results through their employee population. So it's an interesting time to be in this space.
Very interesting indeed. And thank you for clarifying that. It sounds like you guys are solving a definite problem out there. Curious, advanced technology such as artificial intelligence, RPA, machine learning, are reinventing a lot of industries and functional areas within the organizations. What impact do you see these technologies will make on HR in the near future?
You know, that's a great question because with the onset of machine learning and AI specifically, it is changing the landscape of HR. One of the big things that is changing is the availability of data and the assistance in decision making through the use of machine learning and AI. So for example, what's happening even with our own application and with many applications in HR is they're using something called natural language processing, which is a form of machine learning. And basically it analyzes the written word that someone types into, let's say, a survey tool, or in our case, a continuous performance management or a goaling or a feedback application. And so it actually analyzes the written word and comes up with sentiment, positive, negative, neutral types of flags that HR folks can actually learn and grow from and actually can drive their employee population with. So natural language processing is a really big use, is becoming into popular use right now in the HR space. And it's changing the landscape of HR in that it allows us to not just be in the tactical space anymore, because through this additional support in analytics, we're able to note where there's fire, and when there's where there's smoke, let's say, we can drill down to where there's fire. And it allows us in HR to become more strategic and navigate to where those pain points are much more quickly. And I can give you an example of that. So one would be if you're using natural language processing, let's say, is my example, and I am doing frequent lightweight conversations throughout the year, which is what our application does. The analysis that natural language processing does is it alerts me as an HR leader that there is an overuse of negative language, let's say, with an employee population or a specific employee or department, and I can drill down further to see if there's flight risks. You know, people were at risk of losing, for example. Or I could also see that in the written word, there's some general trends with managers. Maybe they're using specifically harsh language with a specific gender or a specific ethnic population. And so we can actually drill down for training purposes or, to understand where there's problematic situations. And so that pulls us in HR, it pulls us in a very different direction than we once were able to go. In very large organizations specifically, I can't possibly read all the performance reviews or feedback that goes on in our applications. And yet with the help of machine learning or AI or this type of technology, I can pinpoint some very specific places that I need to look because the data analytics are now there that are able to help me look where there's fire, basically.
Those are really good examples, Diane, that you're providing as far as use of an NLP or other advanced technologies, especially in HR. So thank you for providing that. To shift gears a little bit, I'm on boards of a few companies and been involved with various executive committees in the past when I worked for large corporations, and almost always there is a CHRO representation on them. And some of the top questions that CHROs face that come up evolve around the company culture. From your experience, how do you measure or can you a company's culture, and why do certain companies succeed in clearly defining their cultures while others struggle?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, culture is a really big word and a lot of people use it. And, you know, contrary to, I think, some people's belief, culture is not just providing food for your employees or allowing dogs to work in your work environment. It's really about, you know, when I think of culture, I think about a company as a community. And a community has common beliefs and practices. And if they're lucky, they actually rally around specific common goals. And so when I think of a culture, I think about that community. And what binds cultures together or communities together would be their value system. Our own company, for example, our values are people, passion, customers, and accomplishment. And so when I think about companies that do well with culture and do well at articulating their culture, it's really about, do they have a very realistic lens on what their value system is about and what makes them tick and what drives them and keeps, you know, moves them in a common direction. And so the companies that I see most successful with their culture are those that have a really realistic lens of what their value system is, and B, can articulate that and hire to that and develop to that. And unfortunately, sometimes fire to that, you know, if people are not aligned to it.
That's great. And thank you for clarifying that. We hear a lot, you know, we hire for culture fit, or we hire, you know, for certain culture, you know, similarities, but there's never that clear definition of what that really means. So what you're talking about definitely makes sense. There has been an emergence of various new executive roles, such as chief people officer, chief diversity officer, or chief inclusion officer, which I think these are great. But from your perspective, are these roles a part of HR functional area, and how are they different from CHROs, or are they falling under the CHRO umbrella? Just curious, how does that structured?
So I'll answer that with the first thing I'll say is it depends on the size of company typically. So chief people officer and chief HR officer tend to be just words or, you know, the new titles that people are using for the highest level HR role in a company. Now, when you get to smaller companies, that's typically the case. When you get to larger companies, you actually have far more functional areas under the heads of HR, whatever that title is. And that's where your chief diversity and inclusion officer. So those are very, chief diversity and inclusion officer is a specific role, typically reporting into HR. But at very large companies, they will have somebody who has an entire team of people focused on diversity and inclusion. And at also larger companies, you'll also have, you might have carved out a specific function within HR that is just focused on culture, which would be your value system and your value proposition for your employee population. And so depending on the size of companies, those titles come into play or not. In a small company like ours, my title here is the chief HR officer, and yet I'm responsible for all of those areas under me because I am a small, we have a small company. But again, I've worked at Fortune 50 companies where those roles were also very unique and separate.
Very interesting, and thank you for clarifying that. From HR standpoint, what misconceptions about HR do you face on a daily basis, and how do you address them?
Wow, there's a lot of misconceptions about HR, and I think part of it is the old lens of HR versus the new lens of HR. The old lens of HR would be those misconceptions around, you know, HR folks are just the fun police or they're the moral police. They're not risk takers. They don't know the business. So there's a whole laundry list of things that I'm sure you've heard around HR people. The reality is that that's sort of old thinking when you think about it, because today's HR folks often come from a wide variety of backgrounds. Much like many people in HR, myself even included, I didn't start my career in HR. I started my career in finance. I have an MBA. And so I look at business a little bit differently, or HR a little bit differently, than somebody who may have come up through the ranks completely, 100% in HR. And so we have a couple of different things happening in the HR space that's changing the landscape of HR. One is that there's a lot of people in HR now that didn't start their careers in HR. So they come from other functional areas of the business, which I think enhances their lens. And two, CEOs are actually looking at the function of and the leadership of HR very differently. I think there's a realization in the last decade or so among other business leaders, non-HR business leaders, that, you know, gosh, the people are our largest and frankly most expensive asset in our company. And why would we not want to put more time and attention and budget, to be honest, to cultivating that and making sure that we get harnessing, you know, we get the most out of harnessing the power of our employee assets. And so there's a shift in thinking that's happening, which is great. So it's moving away from those old misconceptions. And then, of course, the leadership in HR looks very different. There's a lot of people with master's degrees in organizational psychology or master's in business degrees, et cetera. And so there's a lot of varied backgrounds now that are coming into HR. So HR is becoming more of a hot ticket item for people to work in. And the landscape is definitely changing. So it's kind of a fun place to be.
That's what it sounds like. fun police. I like that analogy. I can relate to that, what you're talking about, because us at ProSource, even though we're an IT company, a lot of the divisions within the organizations, we cater to HR. We partner closely with HR divisions of big companies, from whether that's IT executive search, IT staffing, or even corporate training. There's always that relationship, so I can definitely relate to some of the misconceptions that you're talking about.
For sure.
You've mentioned briefly MBA importance of education. Good portion of our listeners are second year MBAs, first year mostly Ivy League. And if some of them were interested in building their careers with BetterWorks, Can you provide a glimpse into the company culture and what type of people tend to succeed at a company like Betterworks?
Well, so I mentioned earlier that our value system at Betterworks is people, passion, customers, and accomplishment. We are a six-year-old startup, so we're still a small company. And yet there's a lot of shifts and changes happening in the HR application space or the HR software space. And so one of the things that I can say about our company that really characterizes our company is that there's a lot of passion inside of our company for what we get to do every day and what we get to help our customers with. We are in a situation as a company where, you know, our company, our customers are not coming to us because they want to rip and replace their old annual review process or their old OKR or goaling methodology. They actually want to form something entirely new and different, which is what they're coming to us about. And so they not only use our software application, but they use our professional services organization to help them craft something new and innovative that works just for their business. So it's really kind of an exciting time to not only be in the HR space, but at Betterworks. So for a small company like ourselves, we always have openings in sales and engineering, customer success, and professional services. And the beauty of an MBA background, for example, is the fact that you have a really great business lens. And so even if you work in engineering, by the way, there's a lot of people in engineering. I work here in Silicon Valley. And a lot of people in engineering go back to get their master's degree in business just because they really do want a bigger, broader lens of what's happening outside of the engineering space. And so having that MBA actually really helps sometimes because you're able to understand the full landscape of the business. If you're in a customer-facing role specifically, I think it allows you to do better service to your customers, understand your own business model, and understand theirs as well. So it makes a big difference. Another word about our own culture is that, you know, we are a startup, and startups have, you know, there's a lot of benefits in startups. For those of us who have worked at very large and very small companies, we know that we often shifted to small companies after working for large companies because bigger companies sometimes feel bogged down with process and too much bureaucracy, and it's hard to get decisions made. Often people say that when we've worked in bigger companies. There's usually a faster pace and speed at which we operate in smaller companies like startups. And we have a lot of single points of failure, right, because we are a small company. And so there's a level of heightened enthusiasm and excitement about what we do every day. There's a level of collaboration, and there's a level of innovation that happens. You know, what's interesting is when I contrast and compare my time here at the startup versus working at a very large corporation, I think in terms of, you know, 1 year here is equivalent, you know, to many years when you think about it, because the speed of change that we're doing, that we're experiencing at the startup is tenfold in contrast to a much larger company. And so people that want to work in a startup like Betterworks would come to the table with ideas on innovation and bringing their opinions and their voice to the table. And being ready to collaborate and be part of a really cohesive team. Startups are also typically, you know, oftentimes on the cutting edge of new and using new technology out there as well. And so our environment feels very, very different than the bigger companies that I've worked for. So again, we often have opportunities in engineering, sales, customer success, and professional services. So I'd be happy to chat with people about those future roles.
That's great. And you've mentioned a couple of these opportunities with Betterworks. So I'm curious, when hiring for Betterworks, for those candidates that get to interview with you, do you tend to get creative with your interviews, or are they pretty standard? And if so, what do you look for in some of the responses from the candidates?
You know, what's interesting about that is I feel like the longer I've been interviewing, the less scientific I get with my interviews. I tend to personally take more of a conversational approach in my interviews. And what I mean by that is, you know, my approach tends to be just getting to know the person. and getting a feel for whether or not they're going to be a cultural fit. Somewhere in that dialogue, I will somehow form a question around a big project or experience that the person has had. And typically when they articulate the experience or project that they worked on or the experience they had at a prior environment, what I'm looking for is a clear beginning, middle, and end. I'm looking for their thought process. I'm looking for their contribution to that project. I'm looking for how they articulate that. And to be honest, a little bit about their personality that shows through in how they navigated all of that, how they interacted with colleagues, how they collaborated on things, how they got buy-in when they never, you know, when they had challenges, things of that nature. And so I'm looking for some specific key things like their thought process, their innovative thinking, their problem-solving ability, things of that nature.
That's great. And there you go. For some of our listeners, if you're interviewing at Betterwork, you have some intel information about the interview process and what you're going to get asked. But indeed, thank you for sharing that. And I can relate to some of the, you know, the structure of the interviews and taking more of that conversational approach. I think it's, you know, definitely, you know, much more effective than coming up with just a list of random questions.
Totally. Yes.
Last but not least, I'm sure you read a lot. I'm curious, what are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others?
Wow. Well, given my current work environment, the book I always recommend is Measure What Matters. Our company was formed on an OKR methodology, and OKR stands for Objectives and Key Results. Our original founding team of people at BetterWorks basically created a product that helped companies create objectives and key results, which is a goal methodology. The board member, John Doerr, that wrote the book, Measure What Matters, has been living and working in Silicon Valley and investing in companies for many years. And so he's kind of the evangelist these days on the OKR space. And for many people who may have heard of who John Doerr is, he's an investor of EC here in Silicon Valley. And he would be the person, since most people are familiar with Google, he's the person that introduced the OKR methodology to Google when they were 30 employees. And they still, to this day, use that methodology. So Measure What Matters is a book that I recommend often to people. My own personal reading, it's kind of interesting in my role. It feels like my shift in reading has been more toward research materials. There's some great materials out there on workforce data and workforce trends. We have another person on our advisory committee here at BetterWorks by the name of Josh Borson, who's an industry analyst. So he puts out trend reports through Borson, his company. His older company that he originally founded was acquired by Deloitte. And so Borson by Deloitte also publishes workforce trends. And so there's a lot of trended research materials out there by a lot of different resources that I would encourage people to read, just because the workforce today is very different than it was 5 years ago. And so for me, what I find really interesting is reading the workforce trends and some fascinating detail around that. And to be honest, whatever you choose to read, whether it's research materials or specific books, I would encourage people, you know, to read things that are obviously their own passion, but something that kind of excites them and moves them to action. And so obviously in my role in HR, and specifically because of the company I work for, the workforce trends really make a big difference. There's some interesting trends that would indicate that, you know, every 5 years or in the next 5 years, half of the jobs or nearly half of the jobs that are created don't even exist today, which means it's an interesting trend, and B, it now is thought-provoking for me to try to solve for that problem. So that's why the research materials are kind of interesting for me to read, because, you know, it starts me and my company down a path of problem solving, which is kind of cool. And I would encourage people, your listeners to actually start looking at different research materials.
That's great. And for our listeners, as always, we'll make the titles of the books and materials that Diane is referencing in the episode notes. Diane, I know you're not feeling well yet. You still showed up to work to talk to us on the podcast today. I do hope you feel better, and I really appreciate your time talking to us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.